Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Throughout the world, hundreds of caves have been discovered that contain artifacts and paintings from prehistoric times. Werner Herzog explored one of the most famous, Francis Chauvet Cave, in his documentary, Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
These images are memories of long-forgotten dreams. Is this their heartbeat or ours? Will we ever be able to understand the vision of the artists across such an abyss of time?
The artwork found in these caves has provided a glimpse into prehistoric culture, but anthropological archaeologist Margaret Conkey says they only tell part of the story of early humans. For her project, Between the Caves, she's pushed archaeological research beyond caves into the landscapes where Paleolithic people lived and thrived. Margaret Conkey is Professor Emerita of Anthropology at the University of California, Berkeley. Margaret Conkey, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us about the significance of the name of your project, Between the Caves.
Well, we all know that cavemen, of course, have been part of a stereotypical notion of what our prehistoric past might have been like. And indeed, it is based, in fact, that there are caves that were occupied and used and excavated, and they're wonderful locations for excavation. But of course, there were many things that prehistoric peoples did that really were not in the caves. People did not live in the caves on a year-round basis. They moved about from resource area to resource area, and for social and cultural reasons as well. So our project was inspired by the idea to think about what people did when they weren't in caves, where they went, how they got their firewood, how they connected up with other people for mating, for cultural and social reasons. We have a number of archaeological sites which indicate that large groups came together at least occasionally to exchange mates, to socialize, and expand their networks of trade and exchange and society. So we decided, well, how are we going to find out about these? So we took an area in the foothills of the French Pyrenees, somewhere between Toulouse and the Andorra, charted out a triangular, rectangular area, and with a very well-known cave at the eastern end and a well-known painted cave at the western end, and just set out to find out what we could find from the fields, the open fields that had been plowed off and on over the millennia by farmers, to see if there were any traces. By now, we've collected over 6,000 artifacts dating to the Paleolithic period, some of which go back to more than 100,000 years.
You mentioned that your research has revealed clues to Paleolithic societies gathering, meeting with each other. What else does it reveal about how they migrated or survived?
Right. Well, we know that they were mobile, that mobility from season to season or region to region was definitely a way of life. But we also know they had amazing long-distance contacts. And actually, this is well established from the very beginning of the occupation of Europe by anatomically modern humans, where we find shells that are only coming from the Mediterranean way into the western part of Europe. And we find shells and other things, shark's teeth and so forth, from the Atlantic that are found hundreds of kilometers away. And we know right at our site alone at Peira Blanca, we're finding uses of flint, which is a raw material that can be characterized and identified as coming from 200 kilometers to the north. So we know these people were moving, objects were moving, people were moving, and along with that, of course, ideas were moving, culture was moving, social relationships were really the ties, literally, that bind and held a small group societies together over many thousands of years.
One of the things that you identified in your finding is a suggestion of sites called places of many generations, which just seems so evocative and wonderful to me as a term, and I'm wondering what that means.
Well, what we've taken it to mean is that in our survey, walking these cornfields, these vineyards of a beautiful part, I must say, of southern France, we have often found in the same location artifacts that are characteristic and well-known and accepted by archaeologists as being attributable to the handiwork of Neanderthal populations, which were in the area from maybe 100,000 years ago to maybe 35,000 years ago. And on top of those, or mixed in with them, we find artifacts that are characteristic of anatomically modern humans who moved into the region probably around 35 or 40,000 years ago. And so what we see is that even people of different biological groupings with different stone tool making traditions are visiting and using and being at the same location. And, you know, these people were well aware of what kinds of artifacts individuals or other groups were making. And so it's interesting to think about anatomically modern humans coming to a place, looking at the ground and seeing the remains, the stone tools left by not just, you know, their grandparents, but if they knew them, but by a whole different cultural and biological and technological group. So, and then we do see that through the Upper Paleolithic, which is what we call the period related to anatomically modern humans, that is between, say, 35, 40,000 years and 10,000 years ago, and even into the Neolithic after that, we see continued use of some of these locations by people making slightly different kinds of stone tools. So it just makes us think about what was significant about these places, and was it even just the presence of previous people that made them an interesting and significant place to be?
Margaret Conkey, you mentioned the sort of old image of cavemen or cave dwellers that has stuck in our imagination. And we often do think of early humans as other, very, very far removed from modern humans. What does your big picture research reveal about human nature, the way we communicate, move, and express ourselves?
Well, I think the work, especially in the time period and the locations where we are working, as well as in others, for ourselves, anatomically modern humans, shows quite clearly that we use the material world. We imbue meaning into materials. These people were making all sorts of objects out of bone and antler. They had created a visual culture, something that provided a link for them between themselves and the spiritual worlds, which surely they engaged with. They had hopes, fears, anxieties, anger, and warm feelings, just like we do. They were very, very successful for many, many millennia, which is maybe more than we're going to be able to say about ourselves in the long run. And I think that we have tended all too often to limit our understanding of their lives and experiences to the what we think of as the available information, the available archaeological data. So caves and hacking out stone tools and spearing animals has tended to be a kind of a limited understanding of what these people were all about, when it's clear from their abilities to move around the landscape, to know their resources. And when we see what they could do with materials, they knew how you could use ochres and manganeses and how you could use bone and antler. They knew the principles and properties of materials in ways that I think few of us actually understand. So I think what we need to do is remember these people were like us. They had these broad human experiences led to the kinds of rich human experiences that have evolved and radiated outwards since their time.
Margaret Conkey, Professor Emerita of Anthropology at UC Berkeley, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking with you.